Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning together Divrei HaYomim Beis Perek Yud Gimel, the 13th chapter of the second book of Divrei HaYomim. The topic of our Perek is Aviah's reign. Aviah is the son of Rechavam, the grandson of Shlomo HaMelech. Our Perek consists of 23 psukim, and the parallel parasha can be found in the first 8 psukim of the 15th chapter of Menachem Aleph. However, it's much shorter over there than it is here. Let's look at our Perek. The first two psukim introduce Aviah. So we hear in the 18th year of Yerovam, that's when Aviah takes over as the king of Yehuda, and he rules for 3 years. We hear that his mother's name is Michayahu, the daughter of Uriel from Giva, and there is a description of this continual battle between Aviah and Yerovam. Okay, just a few points to notice, and that is that usually the way their kings are measured in terms of years is that the kings who are shorter lived are measured against the years of the kings who are longer lived. So in this case, Yerovam had a much longer rule, so the kings of Yehuda are measured against his numbers of years. Okay, one thing that's worthwhile pointing out is that we already know the name of the mother of Aviah, or Aviyam, as he's called in Menachem, and her name was Maacha, the daughter of Avshalom. Why is he being now described as the son of Michayahu, the daughter of Uriel? How can that work out? So Radak says, no, it was the same person. She just had two names. One was a nickname and one was the name that she was given. And there we see many, many discrepancies. In fact, the name Aviah and Aviam is another example of that same idea. And you can hear the words sound similar. Maacha, Michayahu, Avshalom, Uriel. There's a certain degree of similarity. The Chidah and the Targum point out that no, actually, she had a name change. She became Michayahu later on in her life because she improved. She made decisions that were spiritually appropriate. And as she ascended from the status of where she was originally, initially, that allowed her the opportunity of be called Michayahu. And the Chidah points out that any time in Tanakh you see the letter Vav added to a woman's name, it is a positive attribute as well. In fact, the way the Targum says it is, Va'amutul dahavos itso kishersa isafcho l'miskariyei Michayahu. Because she was a kosher woman, she was a wonderful person, therefore her name was changed to Michayahu to sort of put in the shade the fact that she came from Avshalom, who is a complicated character. So this is seen as an appellation of growth. However, the Malbim says the opposite. The Malbim says, no, Michayahu was the name she adopted when she became a priestess. That means to say, if we fast forward a little bit, we'll see that Asa is going to have to remove this woman from her Gvira, which means to say that she was some sort of involved somehow in the shrine of Avodah Zarah, and therefore this is the name she adopted as a son of the going for the worse. That's perhaps a different way of looking at it. It's worthwhile noting that in the Melachim version, although it is only 8 psukim long and we have a whole perik here, there is one detail over there which does not appear in our perik, and that's Pasuk Dalet Melachim Aleph Perik Tesov, and that is worded as followed: Kilman David, the man David, Nasan Hashem Elokav Lo Nir BiYerushalayim, Lachim Es Bnei Acharav Lamid Es Yerushalayim. The reason that Aviah became king was because Hashem had promised it to David. And the rabbi points out that that means to say that Aviah really wasn't worthy of his kingship. He was only there because he was part of the chain of what Hashem promised to David, that he wouldn't be fully eradicated. So that's really a criticism of his dynasty, saying that he himself does not have the rights or perhaps the merits to be on this throne himself. We're going to have to bear that in mind as we continue reading this perek, because now we have a very terrible battle which ensues between the north and the south. We hear about how in Psukim Gimel to Yud Dalet, we hear about the setup of this war. So Aviah gets together his army, he pulls together 400,000 soldiers to fight against the north. And in response, Yerovam pulls together 800,000 soldiers. So we're talking about a battle of 1.2 million Israelites, one third of them belonging to the south and two thirds of them belonging to the north. And as this battle is about to begin, Aviah gets up onto the Mount of Tzemarim, which is near Har Ephraim. So this is in the north area, he's moving northwards. And he makes the following speech to Israel. And he says, you should know Hashem wanted David HaMelech and his generations to become kings forever. He set up a bris melech, an eternal covenant with David HaMelech. And then the slave, the servant, the pretender, Yerovam ben Nevat, who was a servant to the house of Shlomo and David, he rebelled and all these empty and evil people gathered to him. And they took advantage of Rechavam as a young king when he was Rach Levav, and he was not able to be strong against them at the beginning of his rule. And you now joined hands against what Hashem wanted. You joined against what Hashem wanted. And you pushed away the Kohanim and the Leviim. And instead you put up people who had no business serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And now we, representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have the Kohanim, we have the Leviim. We have those who blow the trumpets of our Kodesh Baruch Hu. We bring the Ketores, we bring the Korban Tamid every day. We light the menorah, all the things that it says in the Torah, and you have left him. If you are essentially going to lose this battle because you are fighting against us. Now, that's a very long and very righteous sounding speech that Aviah makes to the armies of Yerovam. And while this is going on, Yerovam is busy setting up an ambush. So he sends a group of soldiers around the back of the mountain, and as he finishes the speech, the soldiers of Yehuda find themselves surrounded from the front and the back. They call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they blow the trumpets of battle, and Hashem performs an unbelievable miracle that Yehuda and Binyamin of the south have this miraculous victory against the north. In fact, so much so that they kill 500,000 soldiers. So that's to say, 500,000 of the 800,000 of the soldiers. And at this point in time, Israel in the north is soundly humbled by the southern kingdom. And Aviah chases Yerovam back to his territory and conquers a number of cities, including Beis El, including Yeshana and the surrounding areas, and Ephraim and the surrounding areas. At this point in time, Atzar Koach Yerovam Oy Bimeyu Aviyahu. And Yerovam was no longer able to muster up strength against the south. Vayigfeu Hashem vayamos, and he died. This is what we learn from Sukkim Yud Gimel to Chaf. Just to point this out, when Josephus records this in Antiquities, this is the translation. What he says is, "For God vouchsafed to grant them a wonderful and very famous victory, and such a slaughter was made of Yerovam's army as is never recorded to have happened in any other war, whether it were the Greeks or of the barbarians, for they overthrew and slew 500,000 of their enemies, and they took their strongest cities by force and spoiled them." So what Josephus is adding to us in terms of historical context is this is a very, very severe defeat that's being described that you don't see even in the later battles, which on the one hand you say, well, yes, that's a good thing, but we're left with an aftertaste and we wonder, is that such a good thing? One last question, we'll come back to that in just a moment. One last question over here, and that is how is it that Yerovam died? So Abba Brunel says that it says Vayikveh Hashem Yomos. It could mean that Hashem actually killed Yerovam, but the years don't add up because he actually died after Aviam was no longer king. So what it means, says Abba Brunel, is that he didn't have any strength, he was not a powerful king from here on inwards after this terrible defeat of Aviam, the grandson of Shlomo. And finally, the Perek concludes that Aviam has 14 wives, he has 22 sons, 16 daughters, and the rest of his matters in his life are written in the Midrash Nanavi Ido. Ido is a compilation of history, and he passes on and is buried in the city of David. And then the kingdom goes to Asa, his son, and in his days there is a 10-year reprieve of battle, and this is a good time we're looking forward to in the times of Asa. Just a few questions. Looking at this parak as a whole, you see we get mixed messaging. On the one hand, it seems that Aviah is doing this incredible thing. He's speaking the words we wished that Yerovam would have heard. He represents what seems to be right, the Kohanim, the Leviim, the Beis HaMikdash, all the things that Yerovam has abandoned. So it sounds like he's right, and in fact it seems that Hashem corroborates that by allowing him to have this miraculous victory. But then there's a little bit of dissonance here because Aviam dies early. In fact, he predeceases Yerovam, historically speaking. So if he's so righteous, why does he die early? So it seems to be also, if you go to Sefer Melachim Aleph, it seems pretty clear from Melachim Aleph that he was not such a great king. In fact, it says Vayasara, he did bad like his father. Right, so that means to say that it doesn't seem like he himself was so squeaky clean. So how does this work? So one point is to notice that this could be Tanakh's satire of hypocrisy over here. As Rav Yigal Ariel points out, he says that, in fact, the way that he makes his speech is too good. It's too extreme. He says to them, you know, really, Hashem gave the Malchus to the kingdom to David as a bris melach, as a covenant of salt, meaning an eternal covenant. That's not really true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu also depended on their actions. So what he's excluding is the fact he's leaving out the point that actually it depends on their actions. And when you're not living up to it, that's not necessarily a given either. That's the point that he leaves out, which means to say that there is something to be hidden in his side. It's fascinating that actually also as a second point, that there was a punishment to Aviam. If you look at the Yerushalmi Yevamos, Tezayin, and if you look at the Vayikra Rabbah, Perek Lamed Gimel, Parsha Hey, you will see that there's a description of this, and it's a very extensive description over here. It's based on the pasuk in Vayikra, which is V'chisimchu Rumimkor Lamisecho, Ekonam Yad Amisecho, Al Toinu Ishus Achiv, right, not to abuse, not to go too far against one's friend. Has lots of halachic implications. This idea of Onah. So whether it be cheating or whether it be in onas devarim, different ideas that can be learnt out of here. But what is interesting is that in this medrash over here, it links this pasuk of al toinu esh esachiv, that a man should not hurt their brother or cheat their brother, that it goes back to, in fact, our parasha over here. Because in the Divrei Hayamim it says that Aviam smote him a makah rabbah, a large smiting. What did he do? So there's a debate in the Midrash. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana says that he removed their faces, meaning to say he didn't just kill them. Whether this means literally that he scalped them or he removed their faces, and we're talking about, I mean, a severe degree of torture. Shmuel Bar Ami would say that no, it's not that he did that, but he refused to allow the corpses to be buried for 3 days. And after 3 days, we know that legally speaking, it's very hard to identify a person because of the biodegradation which happens under natural circumstances. So meaning to say, the Makah Rabbah wasn't just in numbers, but it was also in the sheer degree as well. And the Medrash then goes on to say that in fact it describes the pasuk which describes the death of Yeravam is actually ambiguous. It says V'lo yatzar koach Yeravam od b'mei Aviyahu vayig feyu Hashem smote him down. That is the pronoun over there, smote him, is ambiguous. Is it referring to Yeravam or is it referring to Aviyahu or Aviyah? So Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani says, no, it actually refers to Aviyah, that Hashem killed him early, which explains why it is that Aviyah predeceases Yeravam. So here you have the hero of the victory dying before the loser of the battle. Why is that? So the Medrash says, that Rabbi Yochanan explains, because Shechistan Barabim, he was too harsh. He tormented him in public by saying that you and everybody who followed you are all wrong. That was too much. Reish Lakish says, because he embarrassed Achia Hashiloni, the prophet who gave Yeravam ben Nevat the license to rule. The Rabbanon say is because ultimately he acquired Beis El, and Beis El was where the shrine of Yeravam was, and he did not destroy it. So for all his great calls to action, he himself didn't ultimately prevail. It was simply a tool for his military victory, for his political victory, rather than it being actually what he believed in. So there's complexity over here. On the one hand, him being the tool of avenging against Yeravam to a large degree. On the other hand, also it being something which is seen somewhat more ambivalently with his early death reflecting that idea as well. This concludes the Perek of Aviyam. Now we move into Asa, which is a more positive era. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.